Hello and welcome to the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Monster Podcast. My name is Josh Lloyd and you can find me on Twitter at @RedRock_BBall. We're back with another season preview podcast, and today, after a little bit of a delay getting started, we are here to talk Utah Jazz basketball. And to join me and to help me in that endeavor, I'm joined by the one and only DJ Trainer of RotoWire. DJ, how you going?
Doing really well, Josh. Thanks so much for having me. I will say technical difficulties all on me. I don't know what happened, but I'll take full responsibility. Just happy to be here. The last time I talked to you, I think we were in Las Vegas during the Summer League, so it's good to jump back on with you.
Yeah, exactly. We met up over there. It was it's definitely a far cry from our current environment, but it was good actually meeting you over there for meeting you in person. And it's good to actually have you on the podcast for the first time as well. Now, let's before we get started into things, where can everybody find your work on Twitter? Where's your Twitter account? Where can they find your writings and the other work that you do?
Yeah, definitely. So all my stuff is on rotowire.com. You can check it out, NBA section. On Twitter, you can find me at DJ_trainer, TRAINOR. So I'm all there. Of course, I tweet out all my links to my stuff just like anybody else in this world. So you can find all my stuff there.
Go ahead and follow DJ over on Twitter and check out his stuff on RotoWire as well. He does a huge amount of stuff. Now, you don't just do basketball, you do soccer stuff as well, is that correct?
Yep, I do a lot of soccer stuff. A lot of league and whatnot, so I definitely do a few different things. But I've been the Jazz beat writer now for 2.5 years about. So yeah, one of my favorite things to do at RotoWire, one of the very first things I ever started doing. So something I enjoy quite a bit, even though I have absolutely no connection to Utah whatsoever.
So how did you get started doing the Utah Jazz stuff?
There was just an opening. RotoWire has a specific beat writer for every single team. Kind of a sexy team. And I was like, that's definitely one I'd like to hang on to. And, you know, now they're kind of maturing into something a little more fantasy relevant, a little more NBA relevant. And I kind of backed my way into a pretty interesting situation, a good beat, I think, as of now.
Yeah, I would agree with that. They are, well, let's talk about that. They are a team that is on the rise. The Dante Exum injury probably sours their season a little bit or reduces the expectations somewhat. But how good do you think this team could be this year? Are they still a playoff contender? Are they a likely playoff participant? How do you see their season unfolding this year?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. They're everybody's dark horse, and since they're everyone's dark horse, it's, you know, are they really even a dark horse? Yep. It seems like maybe that 7-8 spot in the Western Conference really isn't that far out of reach for them. It's a team that was actually one of the best in the second half of the season last year. I think they might have had a top 5 record for second half records. And that change kind of started when Exum took over for Trey Burke. When Joe Ingles really moved in there and Rudy Gobert. And so that's a lot of the, you do wonder about Exum. Trey Burke almost seems like more of a detractor than a helper. And so I don't think, you know, if we're just looking at this team overall, I it's a sexy little team. Like I said, a lot of young guys, they're really doing it the right way. They dumped off everyone a few years ago, Paul Millsap, Al Jefferson. And I think in 8 seed, is certainly not out of question, even though they don't have Exum.
No, look, Exum was a real plus for them last year as a defender, but his offensive contribution was basically, it wasn't just zero, it was a negative. He didn't provide anything offensively. You hoped he was going to take a big step. He looked like he was going to do that from his one game that we saw in Utah Summer League, and then he had the ankle injury, then went and played for Australia and had the ACL injury. Now, in terms of their point guard play, we don't exactly know what's going to happen. We are going to dig into that a little bit later. But let's, you know, we talk about guys who have arrived to these teams in the season previews, and there's not much changing in Utah. The only real guy, aside from draft picks, that has joined this team is Jeff Withey, and I don't think he's going to have any sort of impact on this team. In terms of guys they lost, they didn't really lose anyone either. Jeremy Evans, who's a guy that I'm a lot higher on than probably most people, he left and he went to Dallas. Any net positive, negative from these off-season acquisitions and losses?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're giving Jeremy Evans too much credit. If you're going to count slam dunk championships, then by all means, it was a major loss. Otherwise, you know, there's not a lot of moving parts here. Some guys you have coming in Grant Johnson, Tibor Police is an interesting ad. I honestly don't know too much about him, although he did have a nice alley-oop with Dennis Schroeder last night in FIBA basketball. Trey Lyles coming in as a rookie. I mean, it's a lot of the same pieces, and so there's really no reason for them to be any worse of a team. Yeah, Exum was a loss, but, you know, it's the same cast of characters led by Gordon Hayward, led by Derek Favors, and so not too much has changed, and I think that's good for second-year coach Quinn Snyder.
Yeah, you're right. There's a lot of continuity. There's not much change. They probably could have gone out and done something a little bit more in free agency, but they're just building or they're banking on internal growth with this team. And let's start talking about these young players on this team. And specifically when we look at it, we want to look at guys for dynasty type value. So Dante Exum is not going to play this year. What do you see from him as a guy in the future? Is he going to be a player at some point that you think is going to have fantasy relevance, and in what way is that going to be, or were you discouraged from some of the performances you saw from him last year?
So this is a guy last year who was 19 years old, 4.8 points, 1.6 rebounds, 2.4 assists, 0.5 steals, 0.2 blocks. Sorry for the number dump there. He played in all 82 games, which is one of the most ironic things here. Of course, tore that ACL in August, fifth overall draft pick. And I actually saw him play. I saw the Jazz play the Bucks last year. And Exum, you know, I was really excited to get a feeling. He was a big unknown coming from Australia, didn't play in the, you know, American college system. And so there's a lot of question marks regarding him. And what I saw is Brandon Knight just took him to town when Brandon Knight was back with the Bucks. Exum just seemed completely overwhelmed. And on the offensive side of the ball, you know, he just kind of hit in the corner. I think it was actually a game where he might have scored 18 points. And I think he got five three-pointers. But that was all because the Bucks were completely content with leaving him open. None of that with himself. And so, you know, I'm a little taken aback that I'm not really that high on Dante Exum. But that said, he was part of the impetus for the Jazz really turning around their season last year. As far as dynasty value, you know, I'd be a lot higher on other guys. I think Dante Exum is going to be more of a glue guy, at least over the next 3 or 4 years. I'm not sure, you know, we'll see if his personality is you know, more aggressive than I'm giving him credit for. But I think there was just a lot of content with on the court and not being the guy on the court.
Well, let's talk about the dynasty value of some of the other guys, some of the other young guys in this team, and where you sort of place Exum amongst those guys. So probably the two main guys is Trey Lyles, their lottery pick from this year, and Rodney Hood, who was their second first-round draft choice from last season. The other guys that are on this roster as guys in their first or second year, Grant Jarrett, who was acquired as part of the Ennis Cancer Package, and Olivier Henlon, who was a second-round point guard from this year's draft. Where does Exum sit? If you're picking purely Jazz, you know, young guys in dynasty leagues, does he sit below Hood, below Lyles, above Henlon? Where do you think his value sort of lies? And maybe expand a bit on what you think about Hood and Lyles as well.
Yeah, definitely. So, I mean, I'm going to go ahead and give Hood the main advantage there. He showed that he can score last year. He had lots of foot issues, but I mean, the guy's a pure scorer, pretty aggressive. He ended up starting in 21 games last year. 8.7 points is not a lot, but he did average 1.2 threes last year. Won Rookie of the Month in April. So I'm going to go ahead and go evil dynasty play in Utah. Looking at Trey Lyles, it's really hard to tell because he's coming out of that Kentucky platoon system where he only averaged 23 points a game. He had 8.7 and 5.2 rebounds there at Kentucky. In summer league, you know, you're kind of waiting, you know, this is finally a chance for one of these Kentucky guys to get major minutes and show what he has to offer. He ended up playing 24 minutes per game in the summer league, averaged 11.3 points, but one of the most concerning things is, for me at least, 32% shooting.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that's a pretty big concern. I mean, 32% is just so incredible that he's 19 years old and it's his first NBA, his first NBA action. I'm really not that high on Lyles, personally. You can read into it whatever you want. Obviously, this year is going to bear a lot of markings. So I'd go Hood. Dante Exum, and then Trey Lyles, and then Olivier Hanlon, if I'm pronouncing that right. Yeah, Olivier Hanlon. Of course, the 42nd overall pick in this draft. He's going to take this year off. He didn't have a great summer league. He's going to be with Lithuania's Žalgiris Club, I think is how it's pronounced.
I'm not up with the pronunciation of Lithuanian teams at this point. I haven't done my research.
Yeah. he's got a 2-year contract over in Lithuania, and the back end of the year is a player option. So we could see him next year. He had 5.4 points, 3.4 rebounds, 2 assists, 19 minutes a game. I'm going to go ahead and stick him under, you know, beneath Exum. So if you're keeping track, I'd go Hood, Exum, Lyles, and Hanlon. In terms of dynasty format value. And who knows, you know, I really wouldn't be surprised if Utah, you know, if it is a mid-round pick, could come in and blow all those guys away. Like I said, Hood did show a lot of promise, but then again, I'm not incredibly high, not a guy that I'm going to go out and draft in all my dynasty formats if I'm in a first-year league. But that said, I would definitely take him in later rounds. Just not incredibly excited about the production potential for the young guys on the Jazz, but they should be able to fit in nicely with Quinn Snyder's system.
Trey Lyles, I'm with you. I'm not all that sold on him. Maybe probably next year when Trevor Booker's contract expires, he moves into that primary backup big man role, and then maybe we see something, you know, a little bit interesting happening with him. But there's going to be nothing we get from him this year. Exum, obviously, we're getting zero from. Hood's a guy that does interest me this year. He ended the season really, really well. It was going to be a bit of a minutes crunch for him this year in terms of Alec Burks coming back from the shoulder problem. But now with Exum out, there's minutes in the backcourt, and that could mean that Burks moves over and plays a more point guard, allowing more minutes for Hood at the two. So I think that Hood is going to be an interesting player for this season. Now, his current ADP is 145, so people are taking a stab at him in the last round, and I think that's definitely the right place to go. And even if you want to go a round higher, I've got absolutely no problem with that. I think that there is a little bit of upside for Rodney Hood. Hopefully there's no foot issues. I don't think there's going to be anything sort of outstanding with that from last season or anything's going to continue. But he's a guy who's going to have a bigger opportunity this year than what he would have had at any other stage if Exum hadn't have got hurt. Let's move on. Let's talk point guard, DJ. Who's going to start? Is it going to be Trey Burke?
Yeah, there's a lot to talk about. Yeah, so that's the really interesting thing here is this is a major year for Trey Burke. It's his third year in the league. He really hasn't shown much in the way of, you know, being a reliable NBA point guard. You know, I was writing the preview for RotoWire for him, and I think I said something along the lines of, you know, he's really harmful to his team, especially when you have guys like Gordon Hayward and even Derek Favors, Alec Burks, who have shown that they can score the ball. That's one of the reasons why the Jazz were so successful, is you put Exum on the court and he doesn't need to score, and so it opens things up for other guys. So Burke has to be the starter, and you got to think that Snyder is just going to ask him to be more of a facilitator and less of a shooter. I don't think that's going to happen. And that, though, you know, I'm not high on Trey Burke, but he's going to be on the court for so long that, you know, he's going to brute force his way into production and have some sort of value. Alec Burks, a couple of years ago, you know, he was really playing a lot of point guard off the bench, and it came out that he really wasn't comfortable at point guard and that he openly preferred playing shooting guard. And so I'm wondering if Quinn Snyder is going to allow him to just stay at that two guard slot. Raul Nito is a rookie. He's more of a traditional point guard like Quinn Snyder likes. If you're trying to Exum did last year, I'd be looking at Nito. He's a 23-year-old point guard. He was originally chosen by the Hawks. with a 47th overall pick in the 2013 draft, but has spent the last couple of years in Spain. I think potentially halfway through the season, maybe the turn of the calendar year, we're looking at February or March, Nito could definitely be the starting point guard for the Jazz, with Burke coming off the bench in more of a traditional six. He actually can shoot the ball like he likes to. But yeah, I think you've got to start with Trey Burke. Alec Burks will get mixed in there just by the fact that they don't have a lot of depth. And Nito's someone to keep an eye on midseason.
Yeah, that's true with Nito. I think that we could be seeing him take the starting job at some point in the year. I think almost definitely start with Burke. And Burks will run a little bit of it while Nito gets adjusted to it. I think that taking Burks and Burke inside your standard league drafts is probably a fine move. Trey Burke is... Look, he was an odd one last year. He really struggled as a starter, but when he played as a sixth man, he had a lot more value. He was scoring quite well with the second unit. He was hitting threes. His field goal percentage was abysmal, but he could score. He got decent assists, and especially when you're looking at the guys in the 11th, 12th, 13th round of a draft, if he's giving you 4-plus assists, that's pretty handy. If he's giving you over 1.5 threes, that's also pretty handy. But Alec Burks is a guy who doesn't really hit threes. He can score pretty well. He's a good driver and finisher in that sense. He can get some assists and some rebounds. But I think overall, if Trey Burke can actually improve his shot, and that's a huge if, he is a better fantasy player than what Alec Burks is. They're both going to struggle to crack the top 100 in any sort of format, I would have thought, unless they have really big breakout seasons, which is always possible because they are both young guys. Alec Burks is into his fifth season, and Trey Burks heading into his third season. They're just not exciting guys. I think that's the best way of putting it.
Right. They're kind of two guys that you begrudgingly take later on in drafts. But that said, coming mid-season, you might find you're getting a lot of value from those guys. Alec Burks, a real quick note on his shoulder injury. He said last year right after he got that shoulder surgery that he turned in his shoulder back in college and even had troubles back in high school. And he thinks that this surgery that he had will actually give him full range of motion for the first time since high school. And so it's a little bit of a scary thought to think of how highly rated he was last year. I think last year, of course, he was a lot higher rated than he will be this year. But you're looking at a guy that might actually be able to perform better physically than he did, even though he's coming off a season where he spent most of it on the bench. With Trey Burke, you said it, he shot 37 here, but he had 4.3 assists and 1.6 three-pointers made. Yep. And so, that is really good production. He's one of those guys that he really responds well to Quinn Snyder, to Coach Quinn Snyder. And so if Snyder really coaches him up this year, I think he's going to be really receptive to that. And I think that will lead to eventually a better player that people will be happy to have on their fantasy team. Although going into this season, like I said, he's someone that you take and you're not exactly too excited about it. But I mean, he's 21 years old. I mean, we should give the guy a little credit. I guess he's 22 now. He was the man at Michigan when he played college basketball. Big year coming up for him, but he might sneak his way into the top 100 value by the end of the season if he holds on to that starting role. And, there's a lot of assist potential with those big guys down low and Gordon Hayward.
Yeah, that is true. There is that chance that he jumps up. Well, that brings us on to the next section, DJ. We want to have a look at breakout candidates. So players who go from being a good player to a great player, or from an irrelevant player to a decent player, or any way that you want to really frame it. Who do you look at as a breakout type player on this team?
Yeah, I think, I think Trey Burke is someone that, deserves a little attention for potential breakout player. He's going to be getting a lot of minutes, and so you can't overlook him. Rodney Hood, if he stays healthy, you always say big men with foot injuries, you hate to see that. But shooting guards with foot injuries, point guards with foot injuries, I don't like it at all. Rodney Hood, though, is a guy that could step in, have a huge breakout season. Elijah Millsap, a guy we haven't really mentioned, he was acquired by the Jazz last year. I think he was one of the very first D-leaguers acquired from any team last year. He showed a lot to me. He joined the Jazz in early January. He made 47 appearances in the final 48 games of the season. He ended up averaging 20 minutes per game in his second year as well. But that would probably only be for deeper leagues. So if I had to pick two guys for a breakout season, it might be Elijah Millsap and probably Rodney Hood.
Millsap's a really, really good on-ball defender. So he can get you your steals. Even from standard fantasy leagues, he's that guy that when you're looking towards a weekend matchup and thinking, I need to get myself two steals, there's no one around, the Jazz play two games, then Millsap was always a guy that you could put in there, and he could have three steals across two games or have four steals. Not necessarily do a huge amount else, but he was really good at that steals category. Even in limited minutes, you could almost expect him to get one or two steals across a couple of games. And he's still going to have that role because, you know, Hood's not a great defender. Burks isn't a great defender. Burke is definitely not a good defender. So there is a role for a guy to go out there and play on the wing and play some defense. Now, there is obviously a bit more competition with Burks coming back on the wing for minutes. But he is going to have a role. We've heard Quinn Snyder talk about him in terms of his defensive abilities and the value that they place on that. So there is something there for him to get that and to still get a relatively consistent role. I like Burks as a breakout guy, Alec Burks. He signed that contract wasn't before last season, the season before I think it was. He has to play into that role now. I think they're going to give him every opportunity to do that. He's going to handle the ball some. He's not going to handle it the whole time, so he's not going to be playing exclusively point guard. But there is a chance that he starts in the backcourt with Rodney Hood. They might give it a go. They might like running Trey Burke off the bench with the bench unit. I think the Burks could have a breakout if he needs to get his 3-point shot happening, and then he's got a real chance of being a top 100 sort of player.
Yeah, I think two things to look at about what you just said. Millsap with the steals, he had 7 games last year where he had at least 3 steals, yep. And there were 2 games where he had 4 and 5. And, you know, he's playing from that 15 to 25 minute range, and that's a lot. If he ever backed his way into a starting role, I mean, you could see him conceivably getting at least 32 minutes a game. And then Alec Burks, I'm not going to argue with you at all with the breakout role. I mean, lest you forget, 2 years ago, the Jazz had to decide they could only sign Burks or Nez Kanter, and they decided to sign Burks. And so they, you know, obviously there's a lot of potential there. Not saying that Kanter is like really a great player, that he even deserves the contract that he has now with the Thunder. But there was a time when he had a lot of potential, and so I'm looking for that to really show this coming year as well.
Okay, let's talk sleeper guys, DJ, on this team in terms of, you know, where guys are potentially getting drafted and the overall value they're going to return. The guy that I really like in this section is Gordon Hayward. He's got an ADP of 41. Actually, there's a lot of guys on this team I think could be sleepers, but he's got an average draft position of 41. I think that he quite comfortably exceeds that. He's a top 25 guy in a roto league. He's probably a top 30 or close to a top 30 guy in a head-to-head league. He was fantastic last season. He had a real dip in his field goal percentage in 2013-14, but increased it back up last year. He is going to be handling the ball, which is going to help get his assist numbers back up, which suffered a little bit of a dip last season as well. I think that Gordon Hayward outside the top 40 is a ridiculous sort of steal. He'll lead this team in scoring quite comfortably. He'll give you 1.5 threes, 1.5 steals sort of guy. He could be a 5 rebound, 5 assist sort of guy as well. A great free throw shooter, and I don't feel like he's going to hurt your field goal percentage, because I said he had that one bad year where he shot 41%, but his other years, you know, 49, 46, 44, 45, look, they're not horrible. They're not great, but they're easily manageable. So I think Gordon Hayward is a guy that, even though it's only, you know, he's a top 30 guy and you pick him at pick 40, that's still a round value at the top of the draft, and I think that's pretty significant. And I'm a massive Gordon Hayward fan. I think that he's going to be he'll probably end up in a lot of my fantasy teams this year.
Yeah, you know, if I have so much to say about Gordon Hayward, so just cut me off whenever you think I've said enough, Josh. He's a guy that he's a perennial sleeper. He's the guy that I always end up with in almost every single draft. And he's someone that people don't look at and think, wow, there's a lot of production there. And you're just totally wrong if you don't think that he can really produce. And it's just, he produces across the board. Last year, 16, 5, 5, 1.4, and 0.5, and 1.3. I mean, I think there were only three guys in the league that did that last year, and one of them was included in LeBron James. And so where you had at least 16 points, 5 rebounds, and 5 assists. Last year he fell just short of that. So the big change, like you said, with field goal percentage, that was the big knock on him. Last year he improved it to 45% coming off that year where he had 41%. I'm going to attribute that directly to Quinn Snyder taking some of the pressure off Gordon Hayward when the Jazz decided to make that big change of dumping Millsap, dumping Jefferson. It was all on Hayward, and so he was stacked with the best defender. That is one thing that he's going to see the best defender every single night from every team. Yep. But he's incredibly valuable. I don't know why. There's no reason why I should end up with him in every single draft, but I always do. I feel comfortable taking him in third rounds, and if I can get him in the fourth round, I'm incredibly elated. Just a perennial guy that's severely underrated in all.
You cut off a bit there, but that's I got most of that. But you're right. He's, and you know what? You know what you find? You hear about talk about big market teams and all that sort of stuff, and when you go through and look at rankings, it's and average draft positions, it's always teams, players on the smaller teams that are undervalued by 5 positions, 10 positions, an extra round. Whereas when you look at, say, the Clippers, everyone, you go, okay, they're all right where they should be, or they are getting drafted 10 spots higher. And the Lakers guys are always going too high. And guys on the Jazz or guys on the Hawks are always going that bit lower than what they should. It's a really odd phenomenon that people associated based on name recognition. Gordon Hayward should be a much bigger star than what he is, because he is the best player on this team, I think, by a considerable margin, despite all the Rudy Gobert hype. Gordon Hayward has been the best player on this team for a number of years in a row now, and I'm really excited to see what he does this season.
Yeah, and looking at something, you know, he's played in at least 72 games the last 3 seasons, and he's been the man, and so it really says a lot. I forget the exact company or the exact entity that does this, but one of the companies that tracks how far each player runs a game, and he runs and works harder than every other player in the NBA. He had a ridiculous usage rate in terms of how far he runs in each game 2 seasons ago. I think some of those issues were alleviated last year. 4 minutes a game. He's just a guy severely underrated. He's a guy I liken to Rudy Gay is another guy.
Yep.
Very similar type player, but underrated in Sacramento. And I think you can even make the argument that DeMarcus Cousins is underrated. I think he's the top 4 fantasy guy, and probably has been for the last few years. But a lot of people don't even really know he's out there. And so, yeah, I think the small market teams don't get credit nationally in the NBA picture and fantasy as well. And it just goes to show how versus and all the teams can really have a steal with smaller markets.
I agree. Look, in talking about Gordon Hayward, Derek Favors is another guy who is underrated by about 20 spots. His ADP is 58, and that is just, it's way too low. It's so far below where it should be. He should be a guy that sits around that 40 range, and for him to be picked at 60 is a big steal. But is there anyone on the other side of things who's going to be slightly overvalued heading into drafts based on where you think they're going to be picked? Who do you think is going to be overvalued?
I'm looking at this team, and I would say probably Trey Lyles is the guy that'll be overvalued. That, as we've talked about, that the entire Utah Jazz team is underrated. And so I think Trey Lyles is a guy that probably is going to see less minutes than Trevor Booker for at least the first half of the season. If Lyles is lucky, he'll eventually overtake Booker for that backup role behind Derek Favors. And so a lot of people might make the mistake of drafting Lyles in standard drafts or standard sized leagues. And I think he's a guy that you can wait a few months and easily get him off the waiver wire a few months down the road. Otherwise, I'm looking around, and he's the only guy I'd really say that could be in some aspect.
I agree that I've got him outside the top 300, so there's no chance of him having any fantasy relevance unless a lot of things happen. But the guy that I have And there's not many guys, because again, we're in that small market sort of situation that not many guys necessarily get overrated. But Rudy Gobert is in a situation where, depending on what you're doing, but his average draft position is 25, which is in a head-to-head league is really, it's low. I think that he goes inside the top 15 in a head-to-head league. But in a roto league, his free throw percentage is going to be a worry. And I think people are discounting the fact that that is going to be a concern. Now, he could improve it, and he improved so much in his game last year. He could improve his free throw percentage. But I fear that his free throw attempts are going to increase. They're going to go up. And that's going to become a problem when he's shooting, you know, 60-odd percent from the free throw line. We're talking about a guy that it's not impossible to deal with in a roto league, but you're going to have to tailor your other picks around it to really get it to be competitive. We're not talking about a low, you know, a one free throw a game sort of guy. He could be getting four and a half free throws a game. And if he's hitting them at 60%, that can be a bit of a concern. And that would steer me clear of taking him inside the top 20 in a roto league, unless, say, I grab James Harden in the first round. And then if you pick Gobert in the second round, then Harden actually does cancel that out. But if you grab someone else, like if you pick LeBron in the first round and then back it up with Gobert, your free throw percentage is going to be in real difficulty, and you're going to have to then use your next 3 to 4 picks to pick high volume, high percentage guys to get it back to being competitive. And then that hampers you in other areas. So he puts a little bit of strain on you in that area. Do you agree or disagree with me on Gobert there?
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. That 62% last year is certainly troubling, but I don't know that you should, you know, pick one category and really belabor it too much and say it's a reason not to pick Gobert. You know, in general, I usually punt free throw percentage in head-to-head leagues anyway. It's something I really don't try to focus too much. Counting stats is more what I focus on. And, you know, you can definitely knock Gobert for his free throw percentage. It sounds like he's going within the first two rounds of drafts. That's equally important in my eyes, is he played in all 82 games last year. Yep. And you know, that shouldn't go unnoticed. Yeah, he's got the bad free throw percentage, but if I got a guy that's playing in 82 games, his counting stats are going to completely offset that free throw percentage. And I'm really not even going to care about the bad percentage there. Cause then, you know, you can also say he shot 60% from the field last year.
That's huge.
I mean, that's going to be a major boost in that category. So, sure, bad free throw percentage, but I'm not going to let it stop me from picking him as much as I can this year.
Look, in a head-to-head league, DJ, I agree. I've got no issue. He's top 15 to me. I think I've got him ranked at 14 currently in head-to-head league. So I'd happily grab him, you know, at the start of the second round. But in roto, it just makes me take that little bit of pause where I think I'd probably let someone else grab him there. So I just don't have to focus the rest of my team to try and balance that out when I want to make sure I've got an above average free throw percentage. But you can team him with, you know, Andre Drummond or DeAndre Jordan. Your free throws, you're not caring about it at all. And then blocks, forget right. about it. Like nobody's catching him in blocks if you get those two guys. Your field goal percentage is through the roof. Your rebound numbers are going to be massive. He's going to be fantastic. But I've just got that little bit of a pause in roto leagues. And with all the hype on Gobert, like last year we saw so much hype on Adetokounmpo going into the season. Gobert is exceeding that this year. He is the guy that everyone's hyped about. And I think there's going to be people who grab him in those sort of situations, in rotisserie sort of leagues, and don't really factor in the negative contribution he's going to have there and don't build the team accordingly. And it's going to lead to them, look, they might finish well and finish strong in their standings, but it's hard for you to finish first if you don't adequately really look at that percentage and build your other guys around it. So that's the thing where, like, I'm nitpicking and I'm getting a little bit finicky with that, but I think that some people will buy the hype on Gobert and just ignore that a little bit in that rotisserie format. But for everything else, go ahead, just get out there and get amongst Gobert, because he is fantastic. Let's talk about Gobert a little bit more, because his numbers were fantastic. Do you see him getting better from last season, or not from last, from the end of last season, or is he just scratching the surface?
I think he's probably just scratching the surface. You know, it's a really interesting case with him, because his 2 years, Ty Corbin, of course, was a coach, and Corbin just kind of outright just refused to play him. Corbin was quoted by saying, you know, I'm not going to put that guy on the court because he's going to embarrass himself. And obviously that was just so far from far from reality. That's one of the reasons why Corbin got canned, but it almost made me think that Corbin and Gobert had a personal beef to the point where, you know, it just prohibited Gobert seeing time on the court, because we see him jump on the court last year. Seems like a natural talent that needs to be refined, but the guy is, you know, maybe one of the best rim protectors in the league after just half a season or three quarters of a season of being a starter. So I think he could get better. I'm trying to think here. Yeah, I mean, he's a perennial double-double guy. You know that he's going to be working on his offensive game. That's one thing that might scare me. Obviously, he's going to get rebounds. He's going to get blocks, and he's not bad at steals either. I think he might end up with a steal per game coming up next year. And that's, I think that's totally warranted. And I think he definitely could get better because he's the man and he knows it going into this year. Whereas last year, you still had Enes Kanter starting out the year. And so he kind of somewhat prepared for a backup role. I know no player does that. But he's the man. He knows it this year. And I think he's only going
to. Yeah, look, it's going to be real interesting to see how he goes this year because, yeah, he's got the full preseason of being the number one guy at center. We could see, like, he could win the defensive player of the year. I'd say he's almost the favorite at this point, which is just stupid to think that he is close to the favorite going into the season. There's going to be a lot of exciting highlight plays from him. I can't wait to really see him in action. Let's move to a guy.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Let me just add one thing. I mean, talk about dynasty format. He's 23 years old, and we're already talking about defensive player of the year, like Serge Ibaka and Dwight Howard, always caught up on injuries. And you have Gobert who played 82 games last year and really hasn't shown any signs of wearing down. Talk about dynasty format value. That's a guy that I would love to draft in dynasty formats right now.
I agree with that. You also have to be careful, though, is that so many people are going to be on the Gobert hype train, and he is going to get, especially in an auction, I think his value is going to go through the roof, and you have to know where your limit is. You don't want to get in a bidding war with someone to grab Gobert because he's the sexy name, and he's going to be the next Kareem Abdul-Jabbar or whatever he's going to be. You need to just really watch what you're doing because it could ruin the rest of your plans for the league. Now, we're in a league, DJ, where we've got the a salary cap dynasty league, and he went at pick 8, I think, in that league because of his great salary and his potential, obviously. But he went really, really high in that league.
Yeah, he did, and I think I posted on the he went 8 overall. And how many teams are in that league? Is it 10 or 12?
About 14.
Yeah, 14. Yeah, wow, 14. And so I had the third pick overall. I took Harden because his contract is actually pretty good. He's sitting at $15 million right now. I was thinking, man, I can get Harden and then come back around and I'll get Gobert and I'll just, win this league. And Gobert was taken 8th overall. I said, it was just so foolish to think that in the start of a new dynasty league that I could get him in the second round. I guess you do have to be wary because he does only have 3/4 of a year or half a year as a starter. So there is room to fall. Especially when opposing teams have more game film on him. You never know if there's a severe, a severe hole in his game that we didn't see last year, but that any post defender could expose next year. So there is somewhat of a risk taking him. I'll certainly warrant that. Although, I mean, just on a personal basis, he's one of my favorite players in the league. During his rookie season, he just seems like a funny guy, and I really like him.
He's going
to
be.
He's willing to admit that they're risk taking him.
He's going to be awesome to watch. Definitely, it's going to be awesome to watch him grow and his career blossom. Now, DJ, let's talk about a guy who is who's limited by playing time only. And if he was to get a role where he'd get big minutes, he'd become a real fantasy relevant guy. Is there someone that you see on this team who's really sort of itching for that opportunity?
Yeah, let me just take a quick gander. It's kind of funny. I don't really know. I think you got to look at a guy like Tibor Plyce. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing.
No, that sounds about right to me.
Pronouncing that pronunciation. he's going to be a guy who's only really going to play the center position. And so, of course, he's going to be playing behind Gobert. You wonder if Tibor, and I'm just going to refer to him as Tibor, You know, if he comes in and he is really good, who knows? He's 25 years old. He was originally drafted by the Nets back in 2010. His rights have switched hands a few times since then. He comes in, he shows a lot of, you know, a lot of potential. He's not going to break into the guy looking at. Otherwise, you know, guys like Joe Inglis, really good glue guys, but not a good fantasy option. So even though he might be refined or confined to the bench behind Alec Burks, behind Rodney Hood, behind Gordon Hayward, he's not someone that even if he played 60 minutes a night, that he might not even be serviceable if he played 60 minutes. So I think I got to stick with Tibor on that one. Maybe Elijah Millsap is a guy. We mentioned him already. If he was playing 40 minutes a game, he could very easily steals. So I'll say Elijah Millsap and Tibor Pleiss, but there's not really any budding guys. I mean, 3 years ago, you had Enes Kanter and Derek Favors coming off the bench, and you knew that if they played major minutes, that they would be very fantasy relevant. Not quite the case on this year's Utah Jazz squad.
That's pretty accurate. I think, look, if Hood's able to get the 30 minutes or so, which is definitely an opportunity now, I think he's going to be an interesting guy with tremendous potential. But none of these other guys on the bench really, you know, scream out as being players who are just itching for a big opportunity. Who else do we need to really cover on this team? We've spoken Gobert, Haywood. We talked about Derek Favors as being a perennially underrated guy. I don't think there's much. Actually, you know what? Bryce Cotton, who's an interesting player who's on this team now, does he have a shot at minutes at point guard with the injury to Exum?
Yeah, I mean, it's a long shot. 23-year-old point guard, unpicked in the 2014 NBA drafts. He started out the last year, his rookie year, with the Spurs. He didn't get any run at all with Greg Popovich. I don't think he played 1 minute with the Spurs.
No, I don't recall that. But, playing at all.
Yeah, no, he collected a paycheck and that was about it. A paycheck and just sat in his warm-ups. He probably wasn't even active. But it's interesting that you bring him up, though, because once the Jazz were eliminated from playoff contention, he actually saw quite a few minutes, 4 games of the year. He played 23 minutes per game, and he averaged 14.3 points, 2.3 rebounds, 2.3 assists, 0.8 steals. Of course, last 4 games of the NBA season, you have to wonder if other teams are playing their second and third tier guys as well. Nevertheless, maybe like in the deepest of leagues, midway through this coming year, he could find some relevancy. But I like Raul Neto a whole lot more than Cotton. And Cotton, I think, doesn't even have a guaranteed contract coming into this year. So it's possible that he could get dropped for some D-leaguer that really shows his worth and comes in and does well on a 10-day contract. So Cotton is interesting because of the way he finished out the year, but nothing really that warrants any attention or any action from anyone out there, even in the deepest of leagues.
I agree with you completely on that. Who's your favorite player on this team, DJ?
It's Ben Gobert. You know, now it's not – it's like having a band that you knew when they started at their inception – and it's just not cool to be a fan of that band anymore. And that's how I feel about Rudy Gobert. He'll be my favorite player. Gordon Hayward is also one of my favorite players. I played tennis in high school, and he played tennis and basketball. I think he was an all-state tennis player at Indiana. So I've always liked him for that. Just really superficial reason to like Gordon Hayward. Unnoticed, I think, what do they call him, Superman or Captain America, something like that.
Yeah,
Rudy Gobert, yeah, you've got Captain America with Gordon Hayward and the Frenchman, Rudy Gobert, definitely my two favorite players on the team. I don't know, what about you, Josh?
Yeah, Hayward's my favorite. I like Gobert, I like him a lot. I'm a massive fan of Favors, but Hayward's the guy for me. He can do pretty much everything out on the court. I really love what he can do. I mentioned him before, that he can hit the three, he can score, like attacking the rim, he can pass the ball, he sets guys up, he rebounds, he plays some defense, he's a great free throw shooter, which is not necessarily a reason to love someone, but I think that I don't know why I listed that in those reasons, but I think that he's a really, really good player, and Extremely underrated, and if he was nominated and, you know, chosen for an All-Star game, it wouldn't be, like, people would be outraged at what's Gordon Hayward doing. But I think that based on some of his play, that he deserves to be in the conversation. And yeah, he could get better again this year, and maybe he gets himself a first time All-Star gig, because I think that he has that sort of caliber of play in him.
Yeah, he's one of those guys. He's kind of reaching the peak of his potential right now. If you look at the overall stats of guys throughout their career, they always reach a peak about this time. He's coming into his fifth or sixth season. You know, he's got maybe two or three more years where he can really, really pump out a lot of production. And then, of course, he's going to go on the decline eventually. And so this really is a time, maybe a coming out party for him. Like you mentioned, that dynasty league with a salary cap format. He's one of those guys, you know, he's got a $15 million contract coming into this year, which is basically the exact same as James Harden. So obviously you can find a lot more value if you're in that type of league. But he's one of those guys, you know, I took a deep sigh and I was like, this is a guy I love rooting for. And so having him in a dynasty format is going to be a lot of fun for me. A lot of times, and I say this pretty much on any appearance I make. I said this in a soccer podcast last night, but fantasy is supposed to be fun.
That's,
you know,
right.
you're supposed to enjoy it. And so if you don't like Kobe Bryant, don't draft him. Don't feel like you need to, you know, draft him. Gordon Hayward's a guy I like. I will overpay or overdraft Gordon Hayward just so I can watch him and root for him all year long. Definitely one of those guys I eye up every single season. Love watching him. Love rooting for him.
So you're saying that it was probably a bad choice of me to draft Darren Williams in our league then, if I'm picking people that I like watching, because he's horrific to watch, and now he's on my team. So probably not the best choice.
Well, no, I like Darren Williams coming into this year in Dallas. He's coming home. He's one of those guys. He's like a classic example of fantasy should be fun, so don't draft Darren Williams. Maybe it should from now.
He's just, I can't deal with him. But I agree. I think he's going to have a real bounce back here, Darren Williams. But geez, I can't look at his head. It frustrates me so much. Let's talk all time Jazz guys. Who's your favorite all time player on this team? It probably comes down to two guys. I would suggest for most people. Who's your all time favorite player?
Yeah, I mean, you got to say John Stockton or Karl Malone, right?
Yep.
Is the two guys you're talking about?
Guys.
Who doesn't love Shorty Shorts, John Stockton? Karl Malone is also option. Is also great. I think growing up, I grew up in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and one of my buddies down the street was a huge Utah Jazz fan. And of course, I've only been interested in the Jazz for the last 3 or 4 years, and then especially in the last 2 or 3 years. But he had a cutout of Karl Malone in his room. And we're just in Oklahoma, and it was a life-size cutout. So I'll go with Karl Malone just because I grew up, you know, every weekend just playing video games next side to a cardboard Karl Malone.
That's as good a reason as anything.
Yeah, there's a lot of interesting, you know, former Jazz players in the league right now. You have Kyle Korver, Darren Williams, like we talked about, Carlos Boozer, a lot of guys that have had stops in Utah and have done really well and have actually used Salt Lake City as their jumping off pad for a major contract somewhere else in the NBA. But yeah, I'll go Karl Malone. What about you?
Mine's going to be Stockton, but I just want to talk about Karl Malone, some of the numbers that he was able to put up. He was put up crazy, crazy numbers. Back in the 89-90 season, he averaged 31 points as a power forward. That's pretty huge. Over 11 rebounds as well. Not a big shot blocker. I don't think he had 3 seasons where he got just over one block shot a game. But scoring and rebounds, he was fantastic. And he was a perennial sort of top 10 fantasy guy. Stockton was amazing. The short shorts were great. You know what I loved about John Stockton? The fact that not the short shorts, not that he looked unassuming, but the fact that he was real dirty. He was just a real dirty player. He was all about like nut punches and jersey pulls and everything like that. And just doesn't look like it at all. Just a guy that, you know, like not me, but he's out there just, you know, sack tapping guys all over the place. In terms of his durability, though, I'm having a look at his numbers, and they're great. The first 13 years in the NBA, he missed 4 games, and that was in one season. He played 82 games in the other 12 of those first 13 seasons. That's just crazy durability. And then you have a stretch where he's had like 6 or 7 seasons of like 13 assists a game. His scoring was okay as well. He wasn't much of a sort of an outside shooter, but he had a season where he shot 57% from the field as a point guard. 57, 54, 51, 51. That's 4 years in a row of shooting in excess of 50%. Plus, he was a great free throw shooter. And then he's getting 14 assists a game and 17 points and over three steals a game in a few of those seasons as well. The numbers he was putting up were crazy. And just watching those two, probably the best, maybe not the best, top three duos of all time in the NBA.
Yeah, you definitely had to put those up. I mean, obviously, what comes to mind, Shaq, Kobe. I mean, I'm only 23 years old, so I can't honestly say that I even remember watching Stockton play or Karl Malone play. I think I remember Karl Malone more for the Lakers than the Jazz, actually. I mean, David Stockton, John Stockton's son, 24 years old. He's playing with the Kings right now. I think he would absolutely die to have some of those numbers you just tossed out there. He played three games with the Kings last year.
I think anyone would die to have these numbers because they're ridiculous.
Yeah, they are ridiculous. I honestly can't say that I've looked back at historical stats, but I just can't help from laughing when he said Malone had 31 points and Stockton only missed four games in a matter of years. And I'm over 50% for a point guard. Talk about winning your fantasy league right off the get-go if you get a point guard that shoots 50% in a, you know, roto categories. I mean, you're winning field goal percentage for sure.
That season, he had 14.7 points. He only hit 0.3 threes, but that's, you win, no one hit threes, so that's fine. Three rebounds, 13.8 assists, three steals, 57 and 84 his percentages.
That's amazing.
It's just, it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. These numbers are crazy. Imagine playing fantasy back in the late 80s, early 90s. These numbers, I guess it'd just be more commonplace then, because I felt like everyone was just putting up stupid big numbers, or maybe it's just the guys that I'm focusing on, but some of these guys were putting up numbers that are not even, you can't even compare them to what's happening now, because, you know, we see Chris Paul go out there and have 18 and 10 with two steals. You know, that's great. Well, Stockton goes out and has 17 and 14 with three steals and 57%. You go, that's just on another level again. And even then, he wasn't the best fantasy guy. You know, Jordan and Magic and Larry Bird were doing things even heaps better than that. And it's like Jordan was like a 35, 8, and 8 guy with three steals. And that's like craziness. I can't wait to do the Bulls podcast and really get into some of Jordan's old numbers, because they are insane.
Yeah, I think one thing that, you know, really deserves or makes you really stop and pause is that you could foul a lot harder back then too, you know? I mean, It was harder getting into the lane or even taking a shot. And so all those numbers are coming with more contact, with more hand checking. And so it's really astonishing to think that you could put up and just get slapped across the face, no problem at all, no foul, not going to the free throw line. You really had to earn those points. Yeah, it makes me laugh just to think of those numbers those guys are putting up.
Definitely, DJ. Now, I reckon we're about done covering the Jazz. Is there anything you want to add in with this team before we wrap it up?
No, I think maybe just a couple thoughts. I mean, I've never really considered the mid-level market not getting enough recognition in fantasy. I kind of assumed that fantasy is one of those things where players get. So I really wasn't – I knew that Gordon Hayward was undervalued. I just really appreciate you bringing that up and bringing that to my attention and everyone else's attention, that mid-level market guys still aren't getting attention in fantasy. And so I thought that maybe that's the most poignant thing to come from our chat here.
I think that's something that you definitely need to pay attention to with guys, you know, like Hayward and Favors and many of these other small teams, like Rudy Gay is a great example that you brought up as well. DeMarcus Cousins, there's heaps of guys, there's like Al Horford, Paul Millsap in Atlanta. Like, Atlanta was a great team last year, but they're still considered a pretty small market team. Orlando is another one. Milwaukee, some of the Milwaukee guys get underrated as well. There's just, you know, except for Antetokounmpo, who gets overrated by pretty much everybody. But you can definitely sneak some value. But when you head to the Lakers and to the Clippers, these guys are all going 10 picks too high. And it's subtle, but there is definitely a bias towards those players, even if they're crap players, but, and they just arrive on those new teams, and then they get an automatic bias because they're playing for the Lakers, because they're playing for the Knicks, because they're playing for the Bulls. You know, like Derrick Rose will probably go 10, 15, 20 picks higher than what he should in a lot of situations. And it is something that you can sort of use to your advantage if you're willing to dig into League Pass and watch these teams that aren't necessarily on national TV all the time and be aware of what's happening with their rotations and with their path to success, I guess. That's it, DJ. I think we're done. Where can everybody find you on Twitter again? Give us a reminder, then they can all go and follow you across there.
Yeah, you can check me out at DJ underscore trainer. Trainer spelled TRAINOR. Like you mentioned, I do some other things besides NBA. So you'll definitely catch me a lot of MLS soccer tweets. So I apologize for that. I feel like I just need to give that fair warning before you give me a follow. But always tweeting about the NBA as well. So come find me on Twitter and let me know if it should be this process that we struggle with day to day.
Head across and follow DJ and check out the stuff that he does over on RotoWire as well. And make sure you're following me on Twitter at @RedRock_BBall, on Facebook, on Instagram, on YouTube. Subscribe to all those places and make sure you're checking out Hardwood Paroxysm as well. Check out their pod center that they've got up now and some of the other great podcasts that are over there. Leave a review for this podcast on iTunes, and it's always much appreciated when you do that, and it does help bring it up in the rankings and get it more recognized and get it out in front of more people's faces. DJ, thank you again for coming on. It's good to have you on.
Yeah, no problem, Josh. Thanks for having me. Really appreciate it. I think I'm going to go back to sleep, and I think you probably are too.
I'm definitely going to go to sleep now. I'm going to be back in about, 8 to 10 hours time with a Denver Nuggets season preview podcast with Chris Towers from CBS. So we'll be doing that soon. So make sure you stay tuned for that one. And then across the weekend, we'll also have an Indiana Pacers podcast coming your way as well with Ian Levy of Hardwood Paroxysm. So they're the next couple of podcasts that are coming out in the season preview series. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.